Blog Talk Radio.
Good Monday evening, and welcome Adventurous Coffee Party and Blog Talk Radio listeners to episode 14, I think we're up to, of Speaking of America, brought to you through the absolute marvels of science, commercial free, by CoffeePartyUSA.com. I'm Don Manning, your host tonight, and I would like to invite you to join me here for the next 2 hours, and perhaps you have something that you want to be heard about, something that you want the other listeners and or myself to weigh in on, or maybe you just want to respond to a caller or a guest, something they've said or myself says tonight. Maybe you just want to sit back and listen, and that's okay, too. Tonight we'll be speaking of the recall election in Wisconsin tomorrow. Scott Walker fighting for his room in the governor's mansion and the rest of his term against Mr. Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, and a lot of controversy, of course, surrounding that. And tonight we'll be speaking here in a little bit with Ryan Clayton, a young gentleman from Washington, D.C., who spent the weekend there in Wisconsin, and he'll have plenty to say, I'm sure, about what he's seen, what he was doing there. And we invite you to contribute to the conversation. It's pretty easy to do. You just call in if you haven't already and listen to the show. 646 is the number, 929-2495. And press the number 1 should you wish to go on the air with, like I said, your question or your comment, your observation, your opinion. It's all good, but we do like to try and abide by the little rules we have here, which is kind of play nice in the sandbox. Let's keep the discourse civil, try to move the conversation forward. I know I get on the edge of that sometimes myself, because especially when we're talking about politics and things that we may perceive as being 180 degrees out of our thinking, our agenda, our viewpoint. And so we can get a little excited. Well, let's try to keep it at least respectful and civil, and like you said, respect the other people's opinion, even though it could be different than yours or mine. We're not trying to be a bargain basement version of Sternbeck or Limbaugh or any of the MSNBC shows. We're just trying to again, move that dialogue forward and provide you the conduit to listen to and perhaps speak with the rest of America. So that said, we're going to give you that number one more time, 646-929-2495. I'll probably give it to you more than one more time, but that's the number to call in. Press the number 1 should you want to go on the air, and we will go from there. And it looks like I've got a caller in the 323 area code, and we'll see here if that's the case. 323, are you there?
Hey, Don, it's Eric. You don't recognize my number yet.
No, I guess not. There's something, somebody had written something. Oh, I think this is Jessica on the other other line. I recognize her area code, but it seems to me you've got kind of a floating area code. I don't know. Are you on your cell phone?
Yeah, that's my cell phone. It's Los Angeles,
okay.
But I never changed
okay.
it during my time in Virginia, and now I'm in Denver.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to make a note of it that 323 is your area code. Sorry about that. How's
no
it going?
Worries. Oh, I've had a great day, and I just got off a call for Coffee Party's Be the Media campaign. I'm planning a strategy session with our executive director, Debbie Lynn Molyneux, and David Matarazzo from New York City, who's
sure.
putting in a lot of time to get this all organized for us, and went well. And I'm excited about the show. You know, I just emailed everybody in Wisconsin that's in the Coffee Party email database to say, Wisconsin, we're talking about you. And I just read
Great.
It over. I did it so fast. There was only one typo. It's kind of an embarrassing one. I did an apostrophe D for what do you call it, possessive tense. So anyway, it's going to screw it up there. But yeah. Ryan Clayton, just I want to tell you about your guest who's coming on. Ryan Clayton attended one of the very first Coffee Party meetings in Virginia, and I didn't even know him then, but I know him a lot better now. And I remember that it was in someone's house in Herndon, Virginia, and basically a fight broke out because there was this husband and wife who spent most of the meeting saying, it doesn't matter what we do, the whole country's going to hell. And basically shot down everybody's idea on, you know, how we could take action. And so then Ryan kind of finally pushed back on these people a little bit. And then there was a, you know, it got a little tense. And then Ryan said, you know, no, that was wrong. That was wrong. You know what we should do? We should have a civility pledge. So every time we have a meeting, everybody comes in and they sort of sign this pledge, and then it's clear that, you know, no matter whether we share the same perspective or we come at it, you know, differently, that we're going to be respectful and civil and not, you know, not let things break down. And that was where the civility pledge was born. And Ryan
oh,
and I
really?
Drafted something up the next day, and then it went viral on the web, and it's sort of one of the things that first introduced the Coffee Party to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So he's one of the originators of the civility pledge himself.
Well, he's the originator, yeah. So that's one
Great.
Cool thing about Ryan. And I'll tell you one more thing about him real quick, is that one time in Philadelphia, Annabelle and I were supposed to speak at the Police Executives Research Forum on the issue of immigration and how local law enforcement approaches the issue in situations where there's a tremendous amount of electioneering around immigration and maybe even, you know, an Arizona or an Alabama type law. And Annabelle was in Maryland, and I had flown straight into Philadelphia for the conference from some other city. And she had stayed up all night doing some crazy coffee party thing. And she really wanted to be there, and she was going to jump in the car and drive, having not slept in a driving rainstorm from suburban Maryland up to Philadelphia. And I was so worried that we were going to lose Annabelle if that happened. So I called Ryan, because I knew he was crazy enough to do this, at like 10 o'clock at night. And I said, Ryan, our precious Annabelle is in danger, and only you can save her. And he's like, what do you need me to do? I said, I will get you a hotel. At the, it was some really nice Philadelphia hotel we were in. I will buy a hotel room for you if you will drive Annabelle up to me in Philadelphia and make sure she gets here safely. So he brought his girlfriend, and he said, yeah, I'll do it, but I want not only a hotel room, but a bottle of champagne. So, yeah, he delivered Annabelle safely to us. Yeah.
Great, great. Are you going to be able to stay with us for a bit tonight, Eric? Because I think I do have Ryan, looks like his area code, calling in here. So we
awesome.
Can get to his chat. So why don't I go ahead and I'll just leave your mic on there too, and we'll bring Ryan in here in just a second. And for people that are just tuning in, we're going to be talking with Ryan Clayton. This young man is the founder of 100proofpolitics.com. That's 100proofpolitics.com. And he spent, I think, nearly a decade on the campaign trail for Democrats, various ones. He works as an advertising exec in D.C., I believe. And he is going to be talking with us about what is going on in Wisconsin. And I think 812, hope this is Ryan, right?
That's me. How's it going, Don?
It's going great. I don't know if you got to listen here just previous to me bringing you on, but I also have Eric on the line. He's down in L.A., so I'm hoping that you can share with us and everyone that's listening what you just did here. You know, roll it back to the weekend. You left D.C. and you headed to Wisconsin.
For sure, yeah. Well, one thing before I move on to Wisconsin, I got to let you know, the champagne and the story that Eric just told was for the girlfriend that I had to convince after flying in from out of town from halfway across the country that we were going to drive in the middle of the night up to Philadelphia on a whim. So that was the sales pitch that went on at home. That was my my at-home lobbying effort. But Eric's a great guy and a good friend, and as is Annabelle, and always there for a friend in need, you know. As Eric's been in time for me, so.
Well, it sounds like he came through there.
Wisconsin. But Wisconsin, we just left out this weekend. Just got back actually this morning. Flew in on the earliest flight I could get so I could get back to work, but made sure to get out there to be a part of history. You know, there's a guy up there that thinks it's his job to tear apart the middle class and take away working people's rights. And essentially be the you know, the benefactor to corporations in our country that think they should be running our country. And what he did was he manufactured a financial crisis at the state level, and then he blamed public sector employees, you know, people that work in local government, people that work in state government, hardworking, regular, everyday people like teachers and firefighters and cops, and blamed them for the mess he created, and then tried to take away the rights as a consequence of that. And those people just weren't having it. They stormed the state house. They've been giving them hell every day since. And right now what they're doing is, I think it's the one out of three times in our nation history that a governor has been recalled. And on Tuesday night, he's going to be out of office.
That's definitely what the hope is from the near, I think almost a million people, isn't that right? 900,000 or so signed the recall petition to bring about this election or recall election.
I believe that's the most ever in state history, by the way, too. I could be wrong about that, but I think it is.
No, I think you're correct on that. One thing though, when you mentioned about attacking the unions, I think he mentioned the police and whatnot. Now, didn't Walker, did he leave the police and firefighters union out of his activities as far as like going after collective bargaining and whatnot? I mean, I think he touched on a few things there, but he didn't go at them as viciously as he did teachers and other unions. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, he tried to cut a deal with the police and the firefighters union and saying, you know, well, we won't go after you. And, you know, what the guys in the police and the firefighters union said to him is, they go, we know what that means. That means we're next on the chopping block. If you get away with this,
right,
everybody else. You know, that's what solidarity means. That's the, mm-hmm. the principle of a union, is that we all, when one of us is attacked, all of us are attacked. So when it's mm-hmm. public sector employees that are attacked, police and firefighters are attacked, teachers are attacked. You know, it's a person on the factory line is attacked, we're all attacked. You know, the person working at the grocery store, their rights are attacked. All of our rights are attacked. And that's really what's at the core of it. And so when Scott Walker offered the police and the firefighters union that deal, they just turned him down cold and said, we see what you're doing. You're playing divide and conquer. And that's just not going to go here in Wisconsin, because that's not the way we do politics here in America.
Mm-hmm. And along the police line, too. I've been following this for, you know, like the last year or so, and I've been kind of moderately surprised that this and other things, but especially this, haven't really been on the radar of a lot of people in the United States. It hasn't been, you know, covered very thoroughly on mainstream media, but just to kind of touch on how this guy and his supporters think. If I'm not mistaken, I think he canned the Capitol Police, and then hired private police. In this case, I think it was Wackenhut, and then the police that got fired got reinstated, but yet he'd already signed the contract, or the state had, by his bidding with Wackenhut, so he ends up paying two police forces. Kept the Wackenhut guys on the job because they had a contract, and then had to pay the police that he had laid off because he did it illegally.
Well, yeah, and Scott Walker's been one bad decision after another, you know, since he got into office. You know, like I said, the first thing he did was give away a bunch of, tax breaks to corporations and, created this fiscal disaster. And then he ticked off so many people in the state by going after their rights that they show up at the state house. And then he wants to blockade the state house with police. And a lot of the policemen, I don't think Scott Walker at some point could count on the Capitol Police to turn all those people away and take them out of the people's house. So he had to hire private security guards, which is a bad decision followed by another bad decision. And I guess that contract wasn't upheld, but there's some videos of that time that really strike a chord in your heart, as a patriotic American, where you see, the use of state force to throw people out of a public space that's supposed to represent where we make our decisions together as a government, as we the people. And then you see a governor hiring private, police officers to throw people out of the people's house. It's a dangerous time in America, where things like that can happen and it doesn't make the mainstream media. It's a dangerous time in America where something like the emergency manager law in Michigan happens, where, the governor can strip local city councils or local county councils of their ability to make democratically elected officials to make the decisions. They can just get rid of everyone on the city council. They can get rid of everyone on the county council, and the governor can appoint somebody to run the city or run the county. That's not democracy. And if you think that's democracy, then you're just doing it wrong. Then you have Wisconsin with workers' rights. You have Michigan with the emergency manager law. And then you, of course, have Citizens United, which turns our elections into auctions, where our democracy is up for sale to the highest bidder. And those three things, all held together, signify that we're entering a new phase politically in America. And if we don't get things back on track, I think things could get somewhat dangerous in this country politically. If you look at throughout history where people in political power try to get rid of organized labor, where they try to get rid of people's rights in unions, where they go after and try and destroy their political opposition, like Scott Walker is trying to do in Wisconsin. And that is always a tipping point in history for dark days in a country. And I hope that we could pull our country back from this precipice. I hope that beating Scott Walker on Tuesday night is a sign that we don't put up with this kind of business in our country, and we can nip it in the bud there. So, there are governors all throughout the United States that say, well, Scott Walker got away with it, so I'll get away with it too. Because then he's just the first domino to fall, taking us towards those dark days. And that's why we're out there to help stop it.
And that's very commendable. I tip my hat to you there. Touching back on when you're talking about the all the people assembling there at the state capitol, and the private police or some called goon squad, they actually you may remember they had some video of it. I'm certain of one of the representatives trying to get into his office and was actually taken and thrown down to the floor and handcuffed, by one of these guys. I mean, that's one of our elected, servants trying to do his job, and that's what they get. I mean, the scenes definitely were frightening and reminiscent of other days in history that I'd rather not put a name on, but, everybody can fill in the blanks. I mean, it's a frightening, a frightening chain of events here, and
well, I
know it's a worn-out phrase. People need to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should all be outraged when that happens, not only to an elected official, but when it happens to, you know, the young women on the streets of Occupy who were pepper sprayed by the police, and the kids out in California on the college campus when they were pepper sprayed by that officer. You know, there are things that when we see them, we know they're wrong. And the way that police force is being militarized in this country and the way it's being used against citizens exercising their free speech rights is not constitutional. It is not ethical. And it signifies that the people, the political elite in this country have lost respect for our cherished rights and freedoms. Otherwise, they would not be using militarized police force against people just exercising their First Amendment rights of free speech and assembly. And so I'd encourage them to look around the world and see what's going on, because it will not be the case that police force is able to keep people in line and keep them from exercising those rights. You know, liberty is a universal human calling, and it comes from within, and you can't suppress it for very long, and when you do, it erupts. And that's what's happening around the world. People are sick and tired of being cheated by banks. They're sick and tired of having corrupt politicians that are sold off to the highest bidder. They're sick and tired of being weighed under credit and foreclosure and the threat of going broke and not being able to send their kids to a good school and not being able to pay the bills. And a new day is coming. You know, the beginning is near. All of those things conspire to change the world, and I'm just happy to be alive in the moment when, you know, these are exciting and interesting times, which is both a good and a bad thing.
Do you see, I mean, in your opinion, and you know, it definitely sounds like you are one of those paying attention, do you see a unified effort? I saw a really good piece just a couple nights ago that Rachel Maddow had on her show, you know, talking about since the midterms in 2010 of how a lot of the you know, we're at a record number almost of GOP legislators across the country. And, you know, she went on to talk about how many bills have been introduced since just the beginning of this year in regards to, you know, restrictive voting legislation. 600 bills plus brought up in different houses by GOP in regards to abortion rights. The different things that are happening to cut tax on businesses, that offsetting them by, you know, new taxes or fees that are going to fall on seniors and the low income and middle class, you know, all kind of, you know, under the banner of balancing the budget. And then to top it off, this attack on organized labor in unions that's been going on, you know, well, for a while, but at least over the last 30 years, you know, and I go back to, you know, Reagan and air traffic controllers. I mean, I can't think of the name of the founder of ALEC right now, but, you know, this is a guy that was actually quoted as saying that not everybody should be allowed to vote. You know, what they want to do is control the vote to, I guess, go to a one-party corporate-controlled system. Do you see something as dark as that in the making?
Well, do you know what the definition of fascism is?
Yeah. But share with us so people can draw the parallels.
The definition of fascism is the unification of corporate and state interests. And that's a quote from Mussolini. And he would know. He was a fascist. You know,
yes.
When the state is unified with the popular interest, with the interest of the public, you know, then you have a democracy. Then you have a government for and by the people. And I think it's clear to everyone living in this country right now And we're a little bit closer to one of those and a little bit further away from one of those than we should be. And we got to get Citizens United overturned. We got to fix our constitution to make sure that votes matter more than money in our elections. Because, you know, we should have elections, not auctions. And right now we have billion-dollar donor election or billion-dollar donor auctions for who's going to run our country, and that ain't the way it's supposed to work, you know. That ain't how you run a democracy. You know, it can go either way, and I really do feel like we're at a tipping point. It's probably caused by the emergence of, you know, internet technology and how the world is just connected and everything's happening at a faster rate. You know, the foreclosure crisis is caused as much by the internet as it is by greedy individuals on Wall Street, because it allowed all that robo-signing and all this new technology, and they could make all these trades this much quicker and this much faster, and, you know, they could aggregate the wealth and shift it around the world in, you know, the twinkling of an eye and in milliseconds. And I think that that same danger and, you know, beauty, which, you know, I love the internet, but that same danger and beauty exists with regard to our government and how it's going to change with regard to this new technology that's coming out and the way we're going to use it to construct new government and work together to solve problems, you know, as we the people. It's already changed our social structures. If you look at Facebook and Twitter and how we get news, and, you know, I think Eric has worked a lot on creating a new form of media in the country, you know, based upon citizen journalists. And I think that's the emerging model that's coming out. And that's going to have a big impact on our government as well. But what's clear is that any tool for good can also be used for evil. You know, tools are just tools. You can put a hammer through a window or you can build a house. And so I hope that we get together pretty soon and start building a new house like they did in Iceland, which they threw out the politicians twice until they got politicians that would put the bankers in jail that deserved to go to jail for criminal activity. And then they crowdsourced and rewrote their constitution in Iceland, you know, and that gives me hope that this can be a peaceful revolution of values in our country where we say that, you know, people should own our government, not corporations. And our voice should be louder than theirs. And our voice should be equal to everyone else in this country on election day. And millionaires shouldn't be able to buy our elections. And that should be written in our Constitution somewhere.
Yeah, and, you know, I've used the comparison numerous times. I mean, any two registered voters should be twice as powerful as one registered voter that's a billionaire. And that's not the way it is. Yeah, if that billionaire wants
like
to
that.
Buy the biggest megaphone, you know.
Some people will say, well, you know, you know, money is speech and corporations are people and they have rights. You know, money is property, not speech. And corporations are property, not speech. Mm-hmm. And people have voting rights and free speech rights and property rights. But property doesn't have any of those things. You know, and there are some forms of speech that are and should be illegal. Blackmail could be considered a form of speech under the context of Citizens United. Bribery and graft could be considered a form of free speech where you bribe a politician to do something, and that's exercising your freedom of speech, and that's just ridiculous. You know, speech that encourages imminent lawless behavior, like yelling fire in a crowded theater, that's illegal. And it should be, because it's dangerous, just like having the toxic influence of money polluting our democratic process. You know, our elections are set up to choose our political leadership by counting votes. And the majority of our politicians spend their time counting dollars in order to get on television, in order to buy the public awareness needed to get elected to public office. And they have to get that money from private individuals and private organizations and private corporations. But what we should be doing is taking private money out of public elections and making sure that we, the people, decide the outcome of elections and decide who's in our political leadership in this country. And that's something we can do. You know, they overturned prohibition just a decade after it was written into the Constitution. They funded the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, where Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech, by raising nickels in the mail selling buttons. You know, we have the internet. You know, we have the most amazing tool for mass mobilization that has ever existed on the planet. And I just can't wait to see what kind of a government we create out of that, because it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be new, and it's going to be different, because it's going to be our government, not their government, a government for all of us, we the people.
And in regards to the internet and the power of it, whether it be for good or not so good, do you see the efforts of legislation like SOPA and PIPA and what they did and did put into effect in Europe? Do you see that as a possible way of throttling down the narrative of any opposition to the status quo?
Well, what those bills are about is control. And they want an ability to control the new media like they control the old media. And what it just says to me is that they're really scared of what happens when they're no longer the dominant form of media in our culture, when they're no longer the dominant form of media in our politics and in our economy, because that's slipping. You know, and I can show you graphs and charts that show you how much people are coming away from broadcast television or cable television and going online and watching video. And, you know, it's a much more active medium. It's not as passive. You can't just compel people to watch content like you do with television. And so it changes everything. And I would imagine that the people that make a lot of money off the way things are really scared about that. But the thing they just need to understand is they just have to adapt, you know, and be like fighting against Facebook. And look, I'm a late adopter, you know, like I had a pager for a really long time and everybody else had cell phones and I just kept my pager. And I'm talking to you tonight on a BlackBerry. You know, I don't have an iPhone or a smartphone and all the gadgets and gadgets. You know, I'm kind of usually late to the ball game. But, you know, when it comes to this, these guys better catch up quick, because all of us pretty soon aren't going to even have computers and laptops. We're just going to have mobile phones and tablets. And we're all going to be online, and the whole world's going to be connected. You know, you can talk to somebody halfway across the world on a line that's free on the internet, and you can translate your speech talking to them, and they can translate their speech talking back to you. You can have a conversation with somebody who doesn't even speak your language. You know, I don't think that can help but change the world. And so
right.
the things that are going to come out of the internet, I don't think they can be controlled. I think those who try are tasked with a fool's errand. And I think the defeat of SOPA showed them that they're a very powerful people, that all of us are more powerful than their interests now. And I think that's a very scary thought for them, and it should be, because we're going to take our country back so we can take it forward.
Great. Hey, I want to give our number out again and tell people if they just tuned in, we're speaking with Ryan Clayton from 100proofpolitics.com, and he's just spent the weekend in Wisconsin. We're getting some insight from him. We're going to talk more about that trip to Wisconsin. And if you want to get into the conversation, 646-929-2495 is the number. And then press the number 1 to let me know you want to be on the air. And Ryan, it looks like you do have a caller here that's done just that in the 608 area code. So we'll bring them on and see what's on their mind. 608 area code, you're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Mary Ellen, and I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Awesome.
Hey, Mary Ellen.
Yeah, and
how's it going down there? Are we going to win?
Well, it's extremely tight, and there are some really dirty tactics coming into play this evening.
Like what?
The Barrett campaign just sent out email to everyone that they could get a hold of, because there are calls going out from Walker supporters that are telling people that if you signed the recall petition, your job is done. You don't need to vote tomorrow. That is not true.
Of course not.
There are also, I believe the number is about 70 Koch brothers election observers in the state who will be going to polling places and trying to challenge voters.
Now when you say Koch brother employees or people that they
well,
sent there,
funded by their PACs.
Sure, Okay, but where are you getting that information? I'm not disputing it. I'm just curious as to where the information is coming from.
That came from the League of Women Voters. I'm going to be election observing tomorrow for the League of Women Voters, and it was one of the things that was brought up in the training, you know, session just yesterday.
The Koch brothers were going to have people there to observe the voting too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, incredible.
And there are some things, and hopefully Coffee Party will put this out on Facebook and other places that you do have to vote whether you sign the recall petition or not.
Mm-hmm.
Signing the recall petition did nothing but get the election in place.
Right.
And election observers do not have the right to talk to you or question you while you are in line waiting to vote.
Mm-hmm.
If you are refused the right to vote and there is a League of Women Voters election observer there, talk to them. They'll take you outside the polling place to talk to you, and we can often resolve whatever issue has come up right then and there. And if not, we have immediate contact with attorneys who will be able to speak to, you know, the chief election official on site and hopefully resolve the issue right away to be sure that everyone gets the chance to vote.
Mm-hmm. Let me toss this out to you, Mary Ellen, and Ryan. I don't know if you heard Priebus, the GOP chairman. Now he's from Wisconsin. Is that right? Does he live in Wisconsin? Okay. He almost sounded like he was setting the table here for a recount if it's close, and a Walker defeat the other day when he made some kind of vague reference to, you know how the vote goes, and he kind of made kind of ambiguous, vague references to voter fraud, and you know how much of that is allegedly going on throughout the nation all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's 0.007% of the vote has been found to be fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you that one of those was from the Republican Secretary of State in Indiana. He'd been voting someplace he ain't lived for many number of years, and including, although I don't think this was necessarily voter fraud or a felony, but the senator from there, Dick Lugar, had been living in Virginia for 20 or 30 years, ever since he got elected, and got mm-hmm. hotel rooms when he went back to Indiana, you know. So the people that are committing voter fraud in this country are quite apparently Republican. And, you know, people like James O'Keefe that went in and claimed to be someone that he's not when he went into a polling location to flaunt the rule. The only people that are creating these problems are Republicans and conservatives, quite frankly. And then they're drumming up this charge of voter fraud so they can get voter ID laws passed to keep 10% of the voting population from exercising the right to vote. Because 10% of the voting population, including elderly people, including young people, including people of color, don't have the documentation that they're requiring with these laws. And so when they go to the polling location, they're disallowed from voting. You know, their right to vote in this country is infringed upon by these laws. And that's what all this talk is about. That's why Reince Priebus is bringing it up. That's why Scott Walker will bring it up, so they have an excuse for why they're going to lose this election on Tuesday. Because I'll tell you why they're going to lose this election on Tuesday. Because every person that I talked to on every single door and every single phone call in Wisconsin knew there was an election coming up in the middle of the summer, not even in November when they normally are. I'll tell you this, more people that I talked to in Wisconsin this weekend knew there was an election going on than in 2008 when the presidential election was going on. Like, everybody knew about June 5th.
That's true, although, you know, the sad thing is that everyone is celebrating the fact that they're expecting 60 to 65% of registered voters to turn out tomorrow. That means that more than a third of the voters in this state aren't going to bother walking into the polls.
Yeah, sitting on their hands.
And that just, I find astounding, you know.
Well, I heard a statistic here a few weeks ago, and again, I'm not sure where it came from, but I'm thinking this can't be true. And they said that 38%, I think it was, of voters that were affiliated with the union were planning to vote for Walker.
That is unbelievable.
If I go 38% of union voters are going to vote for the guy that's trying to, you know, chop their legs off.
I mean, that'd be like women voting for Rush Limbaugh for elected office, you know?
Right.
That would be like people on unemployment voting for Mitt Romney for president.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a ridiculous proposition.
But there is such a slick story out there, you know, from the Walker side that says, hey, I brought you 30,000 jobs. Now, those numbers have been denounced by the, you know, Bureau of Labor Statistics, but it doesn't matter. The ad is out there. I brought you this. I balanced your budget. Well, he didn't, but
Scott Walker did create a financial crisis in the state by giving corporations a bunch of tax breaks.
Well, yes, he went
said,
from a
well,
surplus.
What we got to do is we got to strip working people of their rights so we can balance the budget. And that's a bunch of hooey, you know. People have seen that story. It comes and goes. You know, they want to take all the money from Social Security, and they want to give it to Wall Street, too. And Scott Walker wants to take all the money in the state of Wisconsin and give it all his buddies in Wall Street, too. You know, the Koch brothers and all these super PACs and all these Americans Prosperity.
But
you know,
an awful
crap.
Lot of
Everybody
people are believing what they see in the soundbite. And
well, that's why they're soundbites, because people sit around and they think of really smart soundbites that people are going to believe, and then they pay a few million dollars to put them on television. But I'll tell you what beats that. Is beating on doors every night, talking on phones every night, and telling people, hey, there's an election coming up. And the people in Wisconsin on the ground, where I was at in Milwaukee and Madison, they've been doing their job. Because people know there's an election coming up on Tuesday, June 5th.
Yeah.
More than they know that the presidential election's coming up in November.
Yes,
you know, everybody knows.
And they know the issues. But
and
it still is going to be darn, darn close.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You
think
can lay
too,
money on a recount no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a mandatory recount if the margin of victory is within a certain percentage. I'm sure in Wisconsin, like in every other state. When you talk about, you know, some of the slick moves and everything that's being made, I read an interesting story that, and I'd already heard some scuttlebutt about it here, but I read an interesting story Sunday that was on infamous.com. Ruth Conniff wrote it, but there was a lot of quotes in there from David Schuster and others. And Schuster's adamant about information that says that there's an FBI probe involving Walker and some of his cronies, and you know, that initially had been a more local, like John Doe thing, and that they you know, are talking about Walker setting up a secret computer network in the governor's office and Department of Administration.
Not in the government's office, but in his office as the county executor as he was running for governor.
Uh-huh.
And it is true that was set up. It is true that county employees were campaigning for him for governor on
mm-hmm.
county time, on the county dime.
Mm-hmm.
The equipment was set up within 25 feet of his office. There are emails, you know, that say we can't have stories like this anymore coming out from Walker.
Mm-hmm.
He has refused to release the email traffic from that computer network. He has spent more than $100,000 on criminal defense, and it says it's not to defend you know, any of his associates. But the only way he can create that kind of a defense fund in the state of Wisconsin is if he is defending either himself or people who are representing him. So if he's spent that kind of money and it's not on his associates, then the suspicion here is that there will be charges laid against Walker.
And just to clarify, what happened was Scott Walker had this computer in his office where they were keeping track of everybody that, you know, gave him money or needed contracts for the local government. And, you know, that computer was sitting about 10 or 15 feet away from where his desk was in the governor's office or in the local county office, county executive
office.
In the
county executive's office.
Right. And so essentially what that criminal probe would be investigating graft and corruption on behalf of Scott Walker that rises to the level of criminality, you know. And
yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me coming out of this guy, you know, coming out of a guy who says what he wants to do is divide and conquer everyone in his state. You know, why would you want to divide and conquer your own people? That's not the way that politicians in a democracy are supposed to act. They're supposed to represent the people. They're supposed to represent all the people. And they're supposed to fix problems, not create more problems. And that's what Scott Walker's done since day one he got in office. It's just create more problems. And that's why on Tuesday night, he's going to get kicked out of office. Guarantee you that.
Well, and the other thing to understand is that the recall is not totally about, you know, the union busting. You know, it's the idea that he would push for the recall or for the rescinding of the state law that allowed women to go through state courts if their pay was not equal. It's about gutting the environmental laws here in this state to accommodate mining interests. It's about handing your political cronies the ability to grant contracts to private contractors without taking any bids. It's about granting your political cronies the ability to sell off state assets for whatever price they choose with no auction. You know, it's about taking, you know, in the state of Wisconsin, it used to be very easy to register to vote. They had deputies that were trained to register voters statewide. And I was one of those statewide special deputies and spent an awful lot of weekends in 2007 and 2008 registering voters. Nowadays, you can't register. You know, I live in the town of Madison right now, and I am certified to register voters within the city of Fitchburg, which is the next community over on one side, and within the city of Madison, which is on the other side. But I can't register voters right now in the municipality where I live because each individual clerk has to certify each individual voter registrar. Now, the rules are the same across the state. The forms are the same across the state. But no longer can you get one training and register people in the state.
Right. It's just more ridiculous hoop jumping and voter throttling, vote throttling.
And more cost passed down to the local units of government.
Right. And you had the, you know, you were talking about the, I believe, the League of Women Voters. They left Florida because of the way they redid their laws down there, where they could get themselves just fined out of business because they want to have all the voter registration information turned in within 48 hours or suffer prosecution. So, yeah, it is more about than just collective bargaining, that's for sure, and I think it's all part of a big agenda. Mary Ellen, stay on the line there with us. I'm going to put you on a hold here, but I'm going to come back to you in a second. We've got some other callers here, too. And thanks so much for your insight of what's going on there. And I do want to come back to you if you can stay on. Ryan, one more time, I'll give out the number here for people. We've had a couple call-ins that I lost here. 646-929-2495. That's 646-929-2495. 9-5. We're talking about the Walker recall election tomorrow, and we have Ryan Clayton with us as guest. And he from 100proofpolitics.com and resident of D.C. that went out to Wisconsin over the weekend. I had a text come in that wanted to know, Ryan, what were your efforts over the weekend? What were you doing? It sounds like maybe you were doing some personal contact of citizens, or were you out knocking on doors and making calls? What did you do? And then what is your feeling? I think I know the answer to this, but they asked, do you think that your efforts made a difference?
For sure. I mean, what I did was I flew out there on my own dime, and I just showed up to the office with a friend of mine, and I said, you know, what can we do? Put us to work. And so they put us through a quick training, and within about 20 minutes, you know, we were out driving out to go knock on some doors and talk to voters and, you know, going around to condominiums and little working-class neighborhoods and even trailer parks and, you know, the south side of town and just, you know, all around Milwaukee mainly, just going out and talking to people, making sure they were, you know, going to the polls on Tuesday, that they knew there was an election coming up on June 5th, and that, you know, depending on where I was at and who I was helping out, you know, telling people why we got to change, you know, why we got to change Wisconsin, why it's actually in the interest of the country to not have somebody like Scott Walker in office in Wisconsin. You know, and the question is, does it make a difference? You know, I knocked on a few hundred doors while I was there. I can't wonder if this election comes down to one vote or two vote or three votes or, you know, 50 votes with me and the friend I brought with me, or 100 votes, or if it even comes down to 100,000 votes. You know, that's the difference that the people out there knocking on doors tonight, making phone calls tonight, that's the difference that makes. And they've been doing it night after night after night. And they're the real heroes, you know, the people that are out there every single night that have been organizing for months, that are going to be there after the election in those communities organizing and helping people figure out ways to solve their problems and get their economy back on track and get the local economy running again so that everybody has jobs. You know, those are the heroes. And I met a lot of those folks and got trained by a few of them and knocked doors with some of them, made phone calls with some of them. And they're just really great people. And I think they're doing an amazing heavy lift right now, because they're going to win this election on Tuesday. And it's going to be due to the efforts of the people that have been knocking doors and organizing in those communities.
You, excuse me. Do you think also that, you know, what I seem to run into is the, well, to put it politely, the sometimes more animated discussion and viewpoints, sometimes bordering on loud filibustering, seems to be coming from this one faction of the right, whether it be extreme right or Tea Partiers or whatever. So they're not as, to me, they don't seem as bashful or as reluctant to share their views on whatever the topic, in this case the issue with collective bargaining and workers' rights and unions. Do you think it possible that the polls are really off a few points just because of people holding back, you know, maybe saying, no, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I don't have enough information, but yet in their mind, they know that they're going to pull the lever for Barrett.
Well, I'll tell you,
it seems that you've met a lot of people that it seems like you met a high percentage of people that seem to be going that direction. That's why I'm asking that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'll tell you, I ain't bashful about how I feel, so I'll be somebody to get in those conversations. And, you know, the second guy I talked to knocking on doors was a Tea Partier. And we got around to the point where, you know, in the conversation where I was telling the same people funding Scott Walker are the same people funding Mitt Romney. And he was like, really? Can I look that up somewhere? And I'm like, look up Americans for Prosperity. It's all the same people, you know. And this is a guy that has a sign out in his front yard for Scott Walker and says that, like, Walker taxes Ranger. You know, I mean, like, this is like a true believer. I didn't even know that the same people funding him, Scott Walker, are funding Mitt Romney, you know, and so he's going to go take down that sign and think twice about what he does on Tuesday, you know. And, you know, he told me he's not even going to vote for Mitt Romney in the upcoming election. This is a hardcore Tea Party. I mean, the right wing's got real problems right now. You know, they've pushed their party so far right that their own people are rejecting, you know, the party. They might have a third party candidacy if they're not careful with somebody like Sarah Palin. You know, there's a lot of people on the other side that are sick of all this corporate control of our government too, you know. And I think that they've been misguided, and they've put their faith in people like Scott Walker, who are part of the problem, and Mitt Romney, who is part of the problem, and Sarah Palin, who's part of the problem. And they go out and they talk really brashly, and they got great talking points, but they don't make a whole lot of sense when they get in government. They just create more problems. And that's what Scott Walker's been doing, because they don't think the government's supposed to solve problems. They just think the government's supposed to be drowned in a bathtub, like, you know, Grover Norquist said, the guy from Americans for Tax Reform. That has, you know, 95% of the Republicans in the House of Representatives has signed a pledge to him that says they won't raise taxes for any reason, even in times of war. They won't raise taxes. And that's the kind of control that the right-wing nut jobs have on our government right now. Frankly, that's scary. And that's why we're headed in a scary direction.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I first heard of the Norquist pledge, I'm just incredulous with it. I'm like, well, you got to be kidding me. We're electing somebody to office to serve we the people, and they've signed a contract, if you will, that they're going to vote repeatedly a certain way on taxes, no matter what. I don't even see how you could keep your office doing something like that. Totally ridiculous.
I don't know why all these guys that are so anti-government end up running for public office, you know? I mean, what they want to do is starve the revenue of government, or starve the government of revenue, so that there is no government anymore, you know? It's like anarchy with a checkbook is what libertarianism is. You know, David Koch of the world, they get to spend all the money they want in elections. They get to do whatever the hell they want. And there's no rules for people like them, but there's no ability for any of us to actually solve the problems we've got going on in our country right now. Because you got a bunch of Tea Party guys waving a Gadsden flag funded by a bunch of billionaires trying to get everybody to do their bidding, you know? But that's not our government. That's their government. That's the problem we've got.
Rolling up to their rallies in the $2 million buses with the fancy paint job. You know, who paid for that? What I see is, like, a campaign sign a while back, you know, privatize profits and socialized debt. Just absolutely incredible. 646 is the area code, 929-2495. People that are calling in, if you want to put a question out there or comment, push the number one. And we're glad tonight to have Ryan Clayton on, who has just spent a weekend in Wisconsin. And we were talking to Mary Ellen there in Madison, too, telling us what she's seeing there. How much of, you know, you hear people try to distance sometimes with the rhetoric, the connection between the Koch brothers and Scott Walker, and then you hear, you know, like Mary Ellen says, where Koch brothers are sending observers to the polls in 70 locations. And then, you know, it was less than a year ago, I think, where some blogger called up and had a 20-minute conversation with Scott Walker as he posed as David Koch. So, you know, what...
It just goes to show you, like, what I'd say to Mary Ellen is, like, Mary Ellen from Madison, Wisconsin, knows that Scott Walker ain't taking her phone calls, right? Scott Walker's surely taking the phone calls of David Koch and the Koch brothers. You know, that's because that's who he responds to. The people that gave him millions of dollars. You know, he's responsive to them. He'll take their phone calls, but he won't take the phone calls of regular everyday citizens in the state of Wisconsin. That's the problem right there, is that that guy has a loyalty to somebody other than the people of the state of Wisconsin. You know, the Koch brothers aren't from Wisconsin. They don't live there. They don't have the right to exercise any political influence over the government of that state, yet they do. Because they can get on the phone and get Scott Walker on the phone any day, any time that they want. That's wrong. That is not how our government's supposed to work.
Yep, and I want to touch back on something else here. With a previous caller, it said that some of this nefarious activity was, you know, happening in the county executive office or whatever, not as governor, but in regleaning through this this story, you know, it says that it was during a conference call that David Schuster was involved in with the former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager and former District Attorney Bob Jambois. And there's a quote in here from that. It's from the Wisconsin Democratic Party Communications Director Graham Zielinski. And he added that there's evidence of wrongdoing after Walker's time as Milwaukee County Executive, and that the investigation includes criminal activity during his time as governor, and says based on conversations with a lawyer who has knowledge of the investigation, and there's a quote here from Zielinski, it says, "We believe that Scott Walker set up a secret computer network in the governor's office and Department of Administration offices, and that the John Doe investigation is seeking evidence of crimes he committed in Madison." And, you know, and going further into this story, you know, it says recent campaign finance filings show that Walker has transferred a total of $160,000 into a criminal defense fund, the only criminal defense fund maintained by a governor of any state in the nation. So, you know, Scott must know something's up.
Well, Scott knows what he did, and Scott knows what he did is wrong. And Scott has a feeling, I would imagine, that he's going to have to pay the piper here coming up pretty soon, because he's going to pay the piper here on Election Day on Tuesday, and then he is going to go through a criminal investigation for the criminal things that he may have done while sitting in the office of the county executive and also sitting in the office of the governor. You know, I think, honestly, with the way he treated people using privatized police at the state capitol to keep people out of, you know, a public building where the seat of the public house, the people's house, you know, I think that that should be criminal. I think any government governor that thinks he can keep people out of their own government and out of the houses of their own government, I think he should be on trial for that, first and foremost. But, you know, it's like they got Al Capone on tax evasion. So maybe they're going to get Scott Walker on this. But the real tragedy and the real thing he should be held account for is trying to keep people away from exercising their democratic rights to free assembly, to freedom of speech, the thing that our country is built upon. You know, and he thinks that because his rich donors tell him, keep the people out and bankrupt the state and blame it on the workers, that that's what he's going to do. Well, he's just not going to get away with it because we're going to stop him on Tuesday. And that way it's not going to happen everywhere else in this country.
And we've spoke here and you mentioned Citizens United as, you know, one of the culprits in our electoral process now in a huge way, and of course, you know, that's going to lead us into the presidential election, where there's going to be I guess billions of dollars punched out over the airwaves. Do you have any thoughts or hopes about what is possibly going to come out of the issue of the Montana in Supreme Court thing?
Well, I hope the Supreme Court revisits the Citizens United decision and reverses itself. You know, it overturned a hundred years of campaign finance laws in this country. You know, and so I hope that they turn it back and go and revisit that decision and decide the other way. because if they don't, well, we're just going to amend the Constitution without them. You know, I mean, either they can fix that law that and fix that ruling Citizens United, or we're going to fix it for them, because there's a popular uprising happening in this country, and there's a process for us to amend the Constitution. It's happened before, and it'll happen again. And this time around, we're going to make sure to take private money out of public elections for good. And on that note, my friend, I got to get going.
Okay, it sounds like you got some activity in the background. Ryan, thank you so much for calling in and chatting with us. And again, that's Ryan Clayton, his website, 100proofpolitics.com. Check it out. Some good stuff on there. Ryan, I hope to talk to you again.
Hey, thanks so much, John. Pleasure being on.
All righty. All right. And I see, I think I've got the light on here for one of our other Coffee Party radio show hosts. I think this would be Jessica, unless I caught her off guard here. Jessica, did you push the trigger there on the phone?
Yeah, I just had a question. I was wondering, I don't know if Mary Ellen is still on from Wisconsin, but I'm wondering how on earth did they get that many signatures in order to do this recall? And I'm wondering if she signed it herself. And then I was in Wisconsin recently, and I heard television commercials. There were a ton of them during the nightly news cast, both for Walker and for the opponent. And there were commercials questioning his emails that he's keeping hidden, and also pointing out his record for his policy towards women. And so I was just wondering if she could maybe comment on some of those things
and give us more
information.
It looks like we lost her, unless I've got another call coming in here now from a 608 area code. So stay with me there, and we'll see if this is her calling back in. 608 area code.
Yep, 608 area code. Calling back in.
Hello.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Mary
I just
Ellen
now
call.
Got you lit up. Is this Mary Ellen?
Yep,
okay,
this is Mary Ellen calling back in. Yes,
okay,
did you hear
the questions from Jessica?
I did sign the recall petition, and I did help collect signatures.
I figured you probably had.
Where did you guys go? Because I know Wisconsin's a bit rural, and I'm just, you know, I can't imagine that there's that many people in Madison, right?
Well, there aren't that many people in Madison. Signatures came in from people from all parties, from all across the state, both people who had voted for Walker and people who had not. And there were volunteers in every county in the state that went from door to door to door and collected signatures. We collected signatures in the entryway to bars. We collected signatures at, town halls. We collected signatures at grocery stores. You name it, if you could stand there, you know, as long as you could stand there, as cold as it was, people collected signatures.
You guys did just such a fantastic job with that. I can't imagine the amount of organization that took, especially in the winter. I live in Minnesota, so I'm not too far away. And we had a milder winter this year, but it's still cold.
That's true. It's a mite nippy when you're out there for a few hours, especially when it's wet.
Oof, yeah.
You needed about 550,000, if I recall, and you got more than 900,000, almost a million.
Yeah.
So, I remember seeing when they were loading the rather large U-Haul truck with all the boxes of filled with petitions. That was a phenomenal job. I saw where people were just like on street corners with a sign, sign here, recall Walker, and cars are pulling over and people are, they're giving them like window service there with a clipboard to get them
this
to
cold.
Sign.
Nobody wanted to get out, but they sure wanted to sign.
For sure.
You know,
That's a great job.
And I was surprised. Now, like at the tractorcade during the protests, I was doing legal observing for the ACLU, and all of the press, you know, were talking about how, you know, bitter cold it was, and it was like 25 degrees. That's summer
that's
in
warm.
Wisconsin in the winter. Yeah. And they were just, you know, I'm here in the bitter cold of Wisconsin. And
well,
yeah, I was
wondering about the emails, and I don't know if that was what Ryan was touching on as far as the secret computer network or whatever that he had set up. But do you know anything about the emails that he's hidden and what that's about?
No, the John Doe investigation is very hush-hush. I know that Barrett's campaign has asked him to release all of the emails from that secret network, and he has just completely ignored the question and not released anything. What the prosecutors have, you know, in Milwaukee, you don't hear anything about until someone's actually charged.
Right. Mm. I know also that Barrett, not only has he, you know, been wanting to see these emails, which of course could disappear with the stroke of a mouse or push of a button.
Well, not so much anymore because the FBI did go in and take hard drives.
Ah, well, good. I hope they got to him quick enough. But he also wanted to know wanted Walker to disclose the names of the donors to his criminal defense fund. What's that?
He has not done so.
No, I wouldn't think so. No. There's. I think they said that there's. They're guessing there's somewhere around 1,400 emails from that network. So I can. I'd like to see those myself. I bet there's some pretty interesting and reading in there, and I'm sure some of it could be pretty damning to some people if it's anything like. Even remotely close to what people think, you know, it's going to be about. It could lead to other people and show the true colors of, you know, what's going on here with these things that are part of the agenda, marching orders of not just the Scott Walker, but you know, all the presently. GOP-controlled houses and governor mansions across the U.S. I mean, I see a pattern. I see things that they're trying to get enacted and whatnot, and they're all on the same sheet of music. They're trying to make some massive changes, and, you know, it's no secret that organized labor has almost always supported the Democratic side of the ticket. So, you know, you cut off the head of that, and you know, the rest of it dies, and there goes the major income source for political donations, and we end up with a one party system, or worse yet, as Ryan was referring to, you know, a fascist state. As scary as that sounds, and as scary as that is to say, that's the way you could be heading if it continues.
Well, it is already scary times here in Wisconsin. You know, you can walk into the Capitol with a concealed weapon, but you cannot walk in with a musical instrument.
Yeah, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, and when I get back to this the voter thing, too, you know, we all know the history of Florida in our presidential elections here, you know, in the last 15 years or so. And, you know, now they've got this big push going on down there where they're trying to cut back the early voting. Purge the voter rolls, of people that they think are dead, or have people come in and prove that they're a citizen, you know, not to assume that they are, if they're a homeowner, driver's license, voted in the case of the one gentleman, 90-some years old, a World War II veteran, he gets a notice to prove his citizenship of being a U.S. citizen within 30 days or be taken off voter rolls. I guess the DOJ sent them notice to, you know, cease and desist, but this has been going on in one form or another in a lot of the red states over the last year or so. It seems to me to be part of the playbook.
Well, it is, and it's part of the legislation that's coming out of ALEC. And, of course, here in Wisconsin, we have stays from the courts on the voter ID for the election tomorrow, so that no one can demand to see an ID, but they have changed the residency requirement from 10 days prior to the election to 28 days prior to the election. They have closed down the in-person absentee ballot voting, the early voting. The time period is much shorter now. And, of course, you know, you have to have all this proof of residency stuff if you want to register same day at the polls nowadays, you know, as part of this law. So, you know, for example, if my daughter were not already a registered voter, she would not be able to go in and register to vote tomorrow because she doesn't have a utility bill or a bank statement that's come in yet since she moved to prove where, you know, her residency, you know, her driver's license just isn't enough.
Right. Well, yeah, and then, you know, some younger people, 18, 19, 20 years old or whatever, that are still maybe living with their parents, they're not going to have a utility bill in their name, or maybe they don't have a bank account. You know, since when do those things become, you know, proof of citizenship? It's just unbelievable. Eric has texted something up here. He says, 15 voters purged in Florida have had their rights restored by election officials. And, yeah, I did see some pushback from election officials in Florida against Scott Walker, who Rick, I can't think of his last name now, the governor of Florida. The guy should be in prison. He built the Medicare system, or had a part in it. His company was fined millions and millions of dollars, and then he ends up, you know, being elected governor. I think he has the lowest approval rating of any governor in the United States, yet he's, you know, behind.
You're talking about Scott, right?
Yeah, Rick Scott. Do I have that right? Rick Scott in Florida?
Yeah.
He's behind this voter suppression or throttling, vote throttling. So, you know, it's just
coming out of ALEC, though.
It really
is. Oh,
yeah,
sure. It's all part of their playbook. I've got another call coming in from Wisconsin, I think, here, 715 area code. So, ladies, if you want to just stay on the line there and let me see who we've got here. Area code 715. You're on the air now. This is Don. Who am I speaking with, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Don. This is Brad from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Chippewa Falls. Brad, how's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. I'm looking forward to getting out and voting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a quick question. You were briefly covering the utility bill, and my girlfriend's son lives with my girlfriend, and he does not have a utility bill in his name. Can she vouch for him?
No. Is he young enough so that he has a report card that shows his address?
No.
Bank statement.
I'll check with him on that. That's very possible.
If he has a bank statement, he has to have a paper copy of whatever he brings to prove his residency. So even if he gets his statements electronically, he'll need to print that out and bring the paper copy with him if he's going to register at the polls tomorrow.
Excellent. Thank you. That helps a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay, Brad, I'm sorry, I stepped on you there, Brad. What was that?
I was just saying that it's just one more vote for Barrett.
Yeah, great. What's your feeling there? What kind of industry do you work with there in Wisconsin? Are you by chance in a union, or what field do you work in?
I'm attending the technical college here at Chippewa Valley Technical College, and Walker really has done some serious damage to their funding, and there's a lot of people that are very upset with what he's done, and at least we have this recourse. I mean, without the recall, we would be waiting until 2014.
And a lot of damage could happen in that amount of time. So the people that you're hearing concern from, you feel confident that they are excited to get out to the polls and push the lever, so to speak, on Mr. Barrett's side of the card?
People really seem fired up about it, and I know it's on both sides, but I know the Democrats are really fired up about being able to exercise their rights tomorrow.
Yeah. Just be aware that students are particularly being targeted, according to the pre-election information they gave us through the League of Women Voters. Students are particularly being targeted to have their votes challenged. So,
oh, of course. Yeah.
You know, be aware.
Do you recommend that we use a hand counted paper ballot or to use the voting machines?
The voting machines are fine in this state, and the counts coming out of those seem to be just fine. Most of the places around the Madison area, you mark the paper ballot and feed it into the scanner, you know, for the count. And,
sure.
You know, the thing, if you use the, the touch screen voting, just be aware that after the election, if you turn out to be the only person that used it, the way those machines are set up, that particular unit of government has to throw away that toner cartridge and buy a completely new one before the next election because it has been used once. Now, it's not like toner can do anything, but the way they set up the machines to make more money for the voting machine guys, that toner cartridge has to be thrown away before the machine and a new one installed before the machine can be brought up again for the next election. So, you know, if you need it because you're disabled, please use it. If you don't, just mark the ballot and feed it through the scanner.
So you have two different mechanisms for voting at the polls.
Every polling place in Wisconsin has to have a touchscreen polling location so that the disabled can vote. And we also have curbside voting here in Wisconsin where, disabled, you can bring grandma who can't walk up the steps, park out front of the polling place, go in and tell, you know, the election officials that you have a disabled person in the car. They will bring a ballot out and have it marked, and then you can, you know, go back in and watch them feed it into the scanner. If for some reason it doesn't feed through, you know, sometimes shaking hands, you won't have a solid enough line on the ballot or something, then you get up to three chances to get it put in. You can get assistance from a poll worker to mark your choice. You can get assistance from anyone you'd like to bring with you to mark your choice or to help you read a ballot.
So, for the most part, from what you're telling me here in Wisconsin, it's a little easier to vote than it is in a lot of other places that that have a Republican governor. It sounds like, even though there's moves being made to
access by the disabled has been protected. I don't know whether he just forgot to remove those rights, but they are
or
in place.
Or if he did a survey that that somehow told him that the disabled voted on the right side of the card for him for the most part, or you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know what's going through the minds of these fellas and their minions, other than they just evidently want to dominate and you know, paint the U.S. map all red.
Well, there's money to be made.
Definitely. Brad, you said that it's your girlfriend's son that you need to get proof of his residency. And is he? I didn't catch it. Is he like in high school or in between that and college or?
No, he's older. He's 28, but
okay.
He lives with his mom. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that won't help him. Does he have a Wisconsin driver's license?
Yes, he does. I'm not sure if he's had. I'm not sure if it has the proper address on it, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not a good thing. That won't work then if he doesn't have the right address on it. The other thing is if you go on the Government Accountability Board's website, gab.wi.gov, there is a list there somewhere of the things that you can use to prove residency. And forget exactly where it is, but poke around a little and you'll find it.
Sure. All right. Thank you. That's a good resource.
All right, Brad. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and I'm glad that Mary Ellen was able to send you in the right direction, I guess, on that. And, you know, get out there and vote and tell everybody else that you can to do the same. And this is a...
Will do. Thank you, Mary.
Oh, not a problem.
I think that maybe we have a technical difficulty with Dawn's phone right now. Mary Ellen, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. This is Eric Feiler. How are you?
Hello?
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Don, we can't hear you. Are you there? Well, Marianne, while Don's getting his phone fixed here, I wanted to offer to you, if you'd like to send an email to your fellow Wisconsiners who are in the Coffee Party email database to let them know about this evil trick, saying that if you sign the recall petition, that you need not vote tomorrow because your vote is already counted. You can just send it to me at Eric with a C at coffeepartyusa.com. Eric with a C at coffeepartyusa.com. And, you know, sign your own name to it. Send it, you know, from the heart to fellow Wisconsiners, and then I'll get it out first thing in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, that would be a good thing. You know,
are you in Fitchburg, actually? Is that where you live?
No, I'm in town of Madison, actually, now. I just moved.
Okay.
So I will be voting in Fitchburg tomorrow because I haven't been in the new place long enough to have established residency here yet. But, so you have to be in one place for 28 days before you can register to vote there now. But if you were registered previously at another residence, then you can go back during that 28 days and vote, you know, in the previous municipality.
But well,
things that go on here.
Yeah, I didn't even follow that, actually.
Well, there is now a requirement that you be a resident of wherever you're voting, whatever municipality you're voting in, for 28 days prior to an election. Since I moved in the middle of that 28 days before this election, then I don't vote in the town of Madison where I live now. I go back to the city of Fitchburg where I lived previously to make my vote.
I see.
And from there, I go out to half a dozen different polling places to observe election protocols for the League of Women Voters and help resolve any difficulties with people trying to vote.
Well, the League of Women Voters is a very reputable organization, and I thank you for participating with them, and thanks for participating with us. We have another caller, actually, 414 area code.
Yeah, Milwaukee.
Oh, great. Milwaukee, you're on the air. This is Speaking of America. I'm guest hosting. My name's Eric. I'm guest hosting for Don Manning. What's on your mind, Milwaukee? Oh, tell us your name first.
This is Babette. And I'm calling to say that we were just out protesting Scott Walker at Sioux Hall. And we were chanting things like, Scott Walker's got to go, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Scott Walker's got to go to jail, and other things. We had Wisconsin Bail Out the People movement. We had people from the Coffee Party there. We had people from Occupy Milwaukee and just interested citizens, all telling him, you know, he needs to leave. And we got a lot of hassle from the Walker people, some very impolite. But, you know, we still stood our ground. We even, you know, walked back and forth through there, and they kind of surrounded us and all. But we sometimes argued with them, sometimes just tried to reason. When that didn't work, we just, you know, stood our ground. That's basically all I wanted to know, Lang, you know, that we're keeping up the fight here in Milwaukee.
Do you guys have bridges of light going over there?
Yes, we do.
Excellent.
Definitely. We even had some of the people from the bridges of light doing the light out in front of Sioux Hall tonight. So.
Super.
A lot of fun. And we've been going out to all the different neighborhoods, you know, from south side of Milwaukee to the inner city of Milwaukee to along the lake, everywhere, and just leafleting up a storm and talking to people and, you know, saying what and listening to what they have to say too, and just seeing what we can do to get them to go out and vote tomorrow. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Thank you for calling in. You're going to get an email tomorrow probably from Mary Ellen. So look for that when you wake up. I wanted to give out the website that Mary Ellen mentioned. It's G as in Gary, Government
Accountability Board.
Okay, so GAB, Government Accountability Board, gab.wi.gov.
Right.
And so that's where you can find more information on what documentation you will need to be allowed to vote in your own election.
If you're going to register at the polls.
Oh, I see. So you have same-day registration, and this is what you need.
Yes.
In Virginia, we have to have that just to vote.
Nope. Nope.
No, I'm sorry. That's
no ID required. We do have to sign the poll books now,
mm-hmm.
but only sign one poll book. One of the problems that we're running into with elections here is that local government funding has been cut back so much under the Walker budget that county clerks and municipal clerks have not been able to send people to training about the new law. So in some locations, municipal clerks have been asking people to sign two poll books. Now that is going to raise all kinds of havoc in the event of a recount.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're asked at the ballot place to sign twice, don't do it. See if there's an observer around, or you can call the attorney number for. You can call the Election Protection Hotline at 866-687-8683. And that will put you in touch with ACLU and League of Women Voter attorneys that can help with any problems with being registered to vote, being denied the right to vote, and just answer general questions about election law tomorrow.
Can you say the number again? I'll put it into the chat board.
Sure. It's 866-687-8683. And that's the Election Protection Hotline.
Got it.
Eric, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, we got you.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of one-legged, though. I'm on my cell phone. I had it already queued up on the board there, but I've somehow lost the internet provider, so I'll just let
you found my email.
Yeah, Mary Ellen, I just sent you an email. So I don't want you to feel like Big Brother's watching you. It's just Eric, the filmmaker.
I can run, but I can't hide.
The 100% volunteer, not political professional, but with a big email database at my fingertips.
And apparently very few Mary Ellens from Wisconsin.
Yep, that's what I did. I did a search. In the database for Mary Ellen's in Wisconsin, yeah. So you have a business. Tell us about your business.
It's Gentle Editing, LLC, and I do editing for publishing houses for very highly technical books. For example, I just finished working on one with one of the guys from the State Department Anti-Terrorism Unit on computer forensics. And what I do is I work with these absolutely brilliant geek engineers and help them translate what they know into understandable English so other people can learn from what's inside their head.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, in some ways, that's what Coffee Party tries to do for those policy wonks that Annabelle is always talking to, and I'm, you know, trying to understand. And then I might hear it once, you know, from, you know, let's say Annabelle and Lawrence Lessig sit down and talk for a while, and I videotape it. So I hear it once, don't really get it, but then I get to see it again on video. Most people don't have that option to replay something. So I'm getting better at understanding it enough to then translate it to regular people, you know, because Lawrence Lessig and Annabelle Park, you know, both have graduate degrees and PhD type stuff and all that stuff. And I, you know, I studied film. Most of my college, you know, education was watching movies. But, you know, that's what we do in the coffee parties. We try to bridge build and we try to show that you don't have to be an insider or a Fox News consumer to be part of politics. You could be educated without going to Oxford, and you can be engaged without watching political advertising disguised as news.
Yeah, that is very, very true. And from the number of, you know, of my children's 20-something-year-old friends, you know, that stop over before elections to say, what does this mean? So it works. I translate politics. I translate mathematician, chemist, physicist, programmer, you know, engineer, you name it.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's like being a professional student and they keep paying you for the term papers.
Nice.
So if you know anybody who needs a good editor or writer, just send them my way.
I definitely will keep that in mind. In Denver right now. Hey, Don, you said I was in L.A. My area code is in L.A., but I'm in Denver right now.
Oh, you're still down in Denver. Okay.
And you know the Blog Talk Radio computer is telling us that somebody should be in on the main line. You know, the host call-in line.
Right. That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, go ahead and do that, and then I'll talk to Mary Ellen for a minute or two.
Okay, all right.
Okay, well, what we're trying to do in Denver right now, Mary Ellen, is we're trying to sort of reimagine this magazine. It's called Ecosa Magazine, ICOSA, and it has a lot of coffee party connections. Eli Regalado, who actually founded this Blog Talk Radio network that we're on right now, I'm in his guest bedroom. And the way I ended up mixed up in this media company that he is heading up is I was driving from Virginia to Los Angeles to go back to making films for a living because during my volunteerism for the coffee party, hey, Don, you back?
Yes.
Oh, cool. You're back with internet.
I think I've got a Lynx wireless router that needs to be taken out and run over out in the street. then I'll go get a new one. I mean, I've got a high-speed super-duper router now, and I just don't think that they like talking to each other for 2 hours, and there's something going on there. That's the extent of my geekdom repair job here.
Oh, you do
anyway.
Have to replace that. My second degree was in electrical engineering, so.
Wow.
Okay, great. Hey, we need you on our team there, Mary Ellen. So I hope while I was offline, I hope Eric was trying to recruit you. I heard you talking about being an editor and whatnot, so.
Yeah. Well, so I'll stop on that story, except for to say that we're going to come out with this magazine in 3 months. It's a quarterly magazine, and this issue is going to try to have a grand unifying theory of how to fix our broken government. And we also do YouTube videos. We have a show called Stardo. It's called Stardo, and the website is stardo.tv. That is opened up by focusing on entrepreneurship in the 21st century and the democratization of capital, which makes it possible for ordinary Americans to invest just a little bit in a company that we believe in so that we don't have venture capitalists, vulture capitalists, and, you know, insider kind of Wall Street bankers deciding which companies go forward and which ones do not. And we think that's a big key to growing our economy and solving some of the big problems that the sort of elite power brokers have failed to solve over the last many decades, or really over the last century. So anyway, I'll be in touch with you about that because I definitely think we could use someone with your skills to pull off this magazine with this tiny startup company.
Well, you definitely want a professional editor, because you are only going to get one chance at people taking a look at this magazine. And if it is poorly spelled, the grammar is bad, the design is bad, they're going to give you the 3-second look online and go away and you'll never see them again.
Yeah. And Debbie Lynn, our executive director, if she was listening, she'd probably she'd probably be texting me right now saying, no, grab her for the Coffee Party newsletter. But we should go back
some
to Wisconsin.
Some stuff I can do volunteer, and some stuff I got to get paid for if I'm going to
pay
the
rent. No, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I just had a question for you on Wisconsin. I was actually on a nationally syndicated radio show the other day with a millionaire conservative, but not crazily conservative talk show host, but super, super wealthy guy. And there are two places where we didn't quite see eye to eye. One was he doesn't really like the 99% rhetoric because it implies that there's 1% of the country that's really not part of we the people and really, you know, not looking out for the best interests of our country as a whole. And he doesn't feel that way about himself, although he is in the 1% of, you know, income and wealth. And the other place where we didn't really agree is that, according to him, Scott Walker has come in and he's balanced the budget and he's brought some, you know, sense, fiscal sense to a state budget that was completely out of whack. And I wasn't really familiar enough with the story to respond to that, but I wonder if maybe you could fill me in.
That is not true. The budget when he took over was projected to have a surplus. With the tax cuts he put into place for corporations, it threw the budget into a deficit. Now, to deal with that deficit, he wanted concessions from the unions, which they agreed to. You know, they agreed to pay more in pension. They agreed to pay more in health care costs. And then, you know, because they heard this through and they attempted to talk to him to start a negotiation to accomplish that, and he refused to talk to the unions. He went straight to this budget bill that, quote-unquote, cut, you know, the collective bargaining rights. And it's not just pension and health care that got cut, and people took a serious hit. My past neighbor, you know, is a single mom with two elementary school age children, and you know, as soon as those cuts hit her paycheck, she could no longer pay her rent. You know, it took more than one paycheck to be able to pay the rent, because of the size of the cuts that went into her check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these were serious chunks of change coming out of people's pockets. And, you know, and it was presented as if these people are all just, you know, living off the taxpayer. Well, you know what? If those people are making more money than you do, they are also contributing more towards their own salaries in taxes than you are. They are still paying tax. They are part of the taxpayers of this state. And the incredible thing, and it's been going on for decades, you know, it used to be, I grew up in Michigan and my dad was a school teacher. And the only tax that anybody had a chance to vote on in Michigan as I was growing up was the school taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The only time they had a chance to say no. And people did very regularly. You know, and it's the same thing here. It's like, well, you know, the taxpayers are just very meager employers. And the sad part is that, you know, the state employees were given lower pay than most private sector workers in exchange for these pension contributions and these health benefits. So it was part of their total compensation. So it is, in effect, all their money that was going into paying these pensions and paying, you know, this health care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an extra expense. It in fact, was their money, part of their compensation package. And to have it presented as if, you know, well, we have to do this to balance the budget. Well, first off, the budget was not out of whack until Walker starved it of revenue. And secondly, the other items that were taken away from collective bargaining, there is no more bargaining for a safe workplace. There is no more bargaining for work practices. You know, there is no more bargaining for benefits at all. And the only bargaining that is left is for salary, and there's a cap on the percentage for that annually. You know, and it's very much like the cap that they put on property taxes here in this state. And then they start pulling the state money that was going to compensate for that away from those units of government and say, gee, you're broke. Well, yeah. So
go ahead, I'm sorry.
It has just been very disappointing to see this and to see the angry rhetoric. Even if you look at some of the conversations on Governor Walker's Facebook page or on Senator Johnson's Facebook page, you know, just the out-and-out, rude, ugly name-calling, primarily coming from the right, is just very disconcerting. You know, Madison was the most polite place I had ever been in my entire life. And sadly, it is no longer so. And just since Walker took place, you know, came into office.
You know, I've witnessed this at the local level in Virginia as part of a political tactic to toxify the social climate and really pollute the discourse around politics to such a degree that it shrinks the electorate down to a level that's easier to manipulate. And my experience was around immigration, so it's very easy to trace the transference of anxiety and resentment and prejudice from minority groups then to those who are not minorities, but for whatever reason, it's politically expedient to transfer the hatred that is cultivated toward, in this case, immigrants, into partisanship. So I wonder, you know, since you've been there on the ground, can you trace the transference here? Because I don't know what it is at the bottom of it all that is so worthy of hatred that you'd want to do this to your own state.
You know, it is really beyond my comprehension. And, you know, maybe it's just because I'm a little old lady, but, you know, it really is, and I just cannot imagine. When you have literally hundreds of thousands of people outside your door saying, this is not right, this is not what we elected you for, and so you lock the doors and close the windows and threaten to arrest any group of four or more people who come in, you know, to the state house.
it just is beyond comprehension. And it has to be tied back in some way to just plain old greed. You know, and if you can convince people to vote against their own best interest by putting someone out there to hate, and by putting some kind of a scapegoat out there.
Well, yeah, they're famous for putting the boogeyman out there. And it is. It's finger pointing. And the film, the project that Eric was referring to here in the about immigration and whatnot, Mary Ellen, he's being humble, but he helped make a documentary called 9500 Liberty. And if you haven't seen it, I would strongly recommend that you get it on Netflix or whatever and watch it. It's very powerful, and it's very timely to what's been going on. And in fact, kind of the front runner of the Arizona papers, please, saying the same, I think the same cookie cutter kind of legislation that Alec was punching out, isn't it, Eric? That they used there. Wasn't there a connection between the people that orchestrated the thing in your film to later into Arizona?
Well, the lobbying organization that wrote the law for my county, Prince William County, Virginia, is called FAIR, Federation for American Immigration Reform. They're an anti-immigration lobbying firm that's 30 years old. And Alec didn't really join forces with them until they saw the potential for electoral, sort of electioneering around immigration demagoguery,
right.
Which was
more
basically prototyped. Yeah, prototyped in our county. And so Alec was instrumental in getting that law passed in Arizona. And their interest in that case was the private prison industry, which is a big part of Alec. And they were hoping, well, the law is blocked currently, but if the Supreme Court allows it, the scam is that you use taxpayer funds to redirect law enforcement away from public safety and toward immigration paperwork, and then you end up incarcerating thousands and thousands of people in private prisons, and then taxpayer money then goes to feed, bed, clothe, and provide medical care for them. So it's a really good, very lucrative business for those private prison industries to essentially extract the taxpayer dollars from the people of Arizona and Alabama now. But I just wanted to continue down this line with Mary Ellen. So I understand perfectly how you transfer hatred of immigrants toward partisanship. But I just don't get it with the unions. I mean, I think, I understand greed as well as the motivation for the people that are funding Scott Walker. And probably, greed and power might be the motivations for Scott Walker. But for the people who vote against their own interests, at the behest...
Well, they're being convinced that, number one, the unions are taking their money, that they are only using it to fund political gain and to make sure that anybody who belongs to the union does not have to work for a living.
Oh, my God.
That they have it easy.
Uh-huh.
And that they have these golden parachutes and, gilted benefits packages and... And if you look at the way that compensation, for most of the country has remained flat or dropped, and the way that private corporations have either cut off benefits or required additional payment from their employees, have cut salaries or given just meager, increases in salaries, have demanded additional hours of work,
you know, and if you can convince those people that you're demanding these extras from, you know, that it's a really hard time and they have to sacrifice, but those people aren't sacrificing. And the reason they're not sacrificing is because of a union. And, you know, then you can turn it to the private sector and say, well, those unions are just taking all your money, you know, and you know, give them the idea that the union is in fact their enemy.
But Eric, would you say you don't get it about the unions? Are you saying that you're talking about the attack on organized labor and unions by the Republican governors or legislation that's brought forward by Republicans? Because my take on that is that it's about the money. I mean, when you take the outside sources of money into our election, the unions, which are fewer and less powerful than they used to be, are religiously supporters of the Democrats and the liberal side of the ticket. You do away with their major donor, outside donor, the unions, and you know, you make yourself a Republican dog and pony show for the rest of time. If they do away with unions, that's the biggest threat. Is the top 10 outside donors, 7 of them go with Republicans. They're all corporations, and the other 3 are unions, and they go with the Democrats.
Well, on the politics side, yes, but on the economic side, if you can convince people that it's the union that's keeping you from working,
sure, well,
or
that's
that it's
the
union who's taking your money, then you can talk them into this right to work crap.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. That's the weapon they're using to gain support from the people that don't, that are out there pushing the lever against their own best interests.
Right.
They're convincing them that this is the thing to do. Just like
their lot
they,
will
know,
be better if they can get rid of the unions.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Just like the people that were out there that are on Medicare that had signs, saying government, stay away from my health care. You know, when they're out there protesting against, the so-called Obama plan or Obamacare, it's the same mm-hmm. thing. You're painting something else as the boogeyman to disguise what your actual target is. And in the case of unions, I'm just totally convinced that the conservatives, the Republicans, the Tea Partiers, they want unions gone. They want them crushed. They want them over with. Not only
so
are they going to fatten the bottom line.
You're saying that the reservoir of hatred goes from Democrats to unions, not from unions to Democrats. Is that what you're saying? They're creating obviously a lot of money is spent. There's an entire news channel devoted to creating not just partisanship, but really hate-based organizing. I mean, they're organizing around hatred toward Democrats or liberals. And to me, my observation is that what they did is they transferred fear of African-Americans, hatred of African-Americans, fear of demographic shift, hatred of immigrants, misogyny, hatred of women, homophobia, hatred of gays. They transferred that to partisanship, to hatred of Democrats and liberals. And then, because the unions are an ally, and really the only powerful ally that can financially, by collectively taking a little bit of money from many people, support Democrats. So then that same, the transference then goes, first from people of color to Democrats and then from Democrats to unions. I mean, that makes some sense to me. I just couldn't, without going through all those steps and spending all the money to create those narratives, I can't imagine how you can convince the average American or any sentient adult that the best way to move this country forward is to take away from workers the simple right to negotiate the terms of their employ and to have a contract that represents that agreement. I don't know how you could do that.
Well, yeah, and I share your disbelief, but it's happening. You know, they're convincing people that, you know, union, bad. You know, it's what's costing you. It costs so much in costs. I mean, I had a discussion with a couple of guys at work today, and, you know, the same thing. I mean, they agree on some things, but they said, well, yeah, but, you know, unions, they used to be good back in the old days. You know, they did this and that, but we don't need them anymore, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, well, it's kind of like, you know, the EPA has made some good regulations, the FDA, the FAA. But we've got the regulations now, so why not just do away with the FAA? And then what? Then all of a sudden the rules start getting broke again and airplanes are dropping out of the sky left and right. We're eating food that's got, you know, E. coli in it. You know, do away with the safety of school buses, whatever. It's all boogeyman stuff to take the spotlight off the real issue. And with the unions, they're making the unions out to be the bad guy to garner support from the underinformed voters and people out there to get on the bandwagon to point a finger at somebody for being the problem of why corporations had to go overseas, why we lost jobs because the unions priced us out of the market, blah, 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 blah. No, the bottom line is the GOP wants the unions crushed because they are the biggest outside source of money for the Democrats. Get rid of the outside source of money. You got Citizens United, all this big dough flowing in. It's cakewalk. Start winning elections left and right.
It's not just politics. It also has to do with the corporations behind it. If you quash
unions... Well, corporations are going to be the politics.
If you quash, but if you quash the unions, labor costs drop like, you know, they just plummet.
Sure.
And you look at any right-to-work state and look at the average salary or the median salary in those right-to-work states, and it's much lower than any other states in the union.
Of course it is. Yeah.
You know, and it's coming back to that line. Greed.
It's
but if you can convince people that greed is in your best interest, even though you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose salary, you're going to have to work more hours, mm-hmm. you know, just leave those details out.
Right, exactly. I agree with you 100%. It's a multi-bladed sword here. They're going to fatten their bottom line because they're going to get to have their way with labor, and the disparity, the gap between the haves and the have-nothings is going to continue to widen. And you know, there you go. If in the long term, if they can do away with the two-party system, get back to what, you know, Ryan was talking about, you know, we're not going to have to worry about voting because we'll just have whoever they want in office win in a landslide every election because there won't be anybody going up against them because they eliminated the opposition. And part of eliminating the opposition in our two-party system is to eliminate the source of the electoral backing dollar-wise, and that is the last big money bastion for the Democrats is unions. So do away with the unions. That's the target. However they want to paint it. But, of course, they're dragging people into it by voting against or supporting things that are against their own best interests because they're hypnotized by the boogeyman stories and all the fingers pointing in other directions other than where they should be pointing to. All that the corporations care about is they're fattening up their bottom line.
Yep.
And well, Scott Walker, he's the poster kid for him right now.
Well, gentlemen, I have got to be up at an ungodly hour tomorrow morning to be off at the polls to observe elections. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Sure it has with you too, Mary Ellen.
All righty. Good night.
All right.
Good night, Mary Ellen.
We went overtime a little bit, but yeah. I think my issue is with the can you still hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Yeah. I think this thing's trying to go out again. I think my issue is my wireless router, I think, is causing my problem here. So I'm gonna plug a new one in before next week and see if that doesn't take care of the problem. It only happens when I'm got this the Blog Talk and Skype both lit up. I don't know what the heck it is other than that, because everything else in here is new. New computer, new router, high speed router, bigger whatever the hell you call it, broadband. And we still have an issue there. So anyway, we'll clean that up for next week.
Okay. Well, I've started the go out music. And so I want you to say a kind of a closing statement, and then I'm going to let the music play a little bit before I end the show, okay?
Okay, great. My closing statement is, if anybody that's listening in Wisconsin, get out there and vote for Barrett and make a stand for the working men and women, and we have to turn this thing around. This is like the first major battle, I think, of us versus them, the 99 against the 0.5% or whatever. We've got to get this thing turned around, or we're going to have a hell of a road in front of us to try to make things right. We'll see you next week. Eric, thanks for coming in and keeping the thing together when I had another one of my little computer meltdowns, and we'll talk to you later on.